Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and once again, thank you for sharing your Sunday with me. You know, the first thing I wanted to talk about, anytime there's any police shootings throughout the week, I always like to send a message out there that to the families of these police officers who are slain, as a reminder to our listeners that police officers are out there doing a tough job. Two officers shot and killed this past week in Mississippi in the performance of their jobs. You know, once again, for some people out there, I know that they feel that police officers aren't getting it done. But again, their lives are impacted just like everybody else's lives when they lose somebody. So sending, best wishes out there to the family of those two slain officers in Mississippi. And for the rest of you officers out there, hey, you know, be safe out there. It's a tough job. Okay, today we're going to be discussing part two of Why Kids Kill. And you'll be surprised with some of this information, but we will pick up. I'll give you a little refresher before we get into that. But before I do that, I want to respond to emails, as I always like to do at the beginning of each show. Jim, my wife and I are very concerned about child abductions. We have two young girls, ages 5 and 3. Should we be overly concerned about someone trying to grab our girls? Chris. You know, after I got your email, I actually did some research on that. And to be perfectly honest with you, a lot of the information that I've been able to obtain, and a lot of it's through the secure websites as well as the Internet, most of the child abductions, to be perfectly honest, they look like they normally have to do with family relations, relationship issues. And I was actually able to obtain information. It's on the international side as well, so that when they have a parent maybe that's from another country, and they're here, they meet somebody here, they get married, and now there's a divorce and a child custody battle, and now one spouse or the former spouse grabs the child and takes the child, you know, across the border. And I don't mean across the border necessarily to Mexico. I'm talking about in general, out of the country, we'll say. So don't send me hate mail, because I didn't intend this for anything having to do with Mexico. I'm speaking in general. That they take them back to their home countries. Now, this is really a big deal. The State Department has actually looked into this for years upon years, and they, in many respects, have tried to do some things. To be perfectly honest with you, it's not as strictly enforced probably as it should be. But I know they have looked at these situations, and, you know, the State Department will do what they can, but they have to deal with the governments from other countries and things of that nature. So it also depends on where they take them and what kind of relationship we have with those countries, et cetera. So the other side that I found out was that it's not like if you're at the store with your child and somebody necessarily grabs a child, you know, and they run out with the child and now you never see the child again. I'm not going to say these things don't happen. There's been stories on the news about a child turning up 14 years later because a nanny or a close friend or somebody took the child. Those things have happened as well. But I will throw the same caution to you as I throw out to everybody. You've always got to be aware of your surroundings, what's going on. And when it comes to children, that's a very sensitive area. So you just have to keep them close and you have to watch them. You have to sit them down and have discussions with them. I wrote a book back in, 2005 or 2008, and it was called Right to Counsel. And in that book, it had to do with a serial killer who had kidnapped, raped, and sodomized 6 girls, with the youngest one being 9 years of age. And, you know, in the book, I can tell you that a number of the children that were abducted and kidnapped like this, the person basically coerced them and they got in their car hitchhiking. I shouldn't say coerced them. Some of them with the older girls, because the ages were 16 to like 21, 22. But the teenage girls actually got in the car with the person hitchhiking. So there's things that we need to be cautious of and that we need to sit down with our children and talk to our children about, and even about some of the things that's going on right now about what may happen and not happen out there. So at any rate, I don't think you should be overly concerned about somebody just snatching your child and going away like that. Like I said, it's more towards the international situations where a parent takes the child back to a foreign country and the other parent trying to get them back. But again, keep them close because there's no guarantees out there. Okay, Chris, I hope I've answered your question for you as best I could anyway. All right, second email. Jim, what do you consider an active shooter event? And do you have any information about 2017 statistics on these events that you can share with us? Well, yes, I do have information on that, as you can imagine, with some of the work that we do. And by the way, if you have any questions, as always, give us a call at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Or you can email me, as so many people do, at listenupwithjp@pontsandassociates.com. All right. Let me tell you what an active shooter event is. I hear things on the news and I get it, but I think it was a good question. So I'm going to take you through a little step-by-step process here with this. If there's a shooting, the answer is yes. Is it in a public place? If the answer is no, it's not in a public place, it's not an active shooter event. Can it be a byproduct of another crime? If it is a byproduct of another crime, it's not an active shooter event. Is it gang-related? Is the next step. If the answer is yes, that's not considered an active shooter event. So there has to be a shooting. It has to be in a public place. If it's not in a public place, it's not an active shooter event. And is it a byproduct of another crime? If it's a byproduct of another crime, then technically they don't consider that an active shooter event. Now, if it's gang-related, it's not an active shooter event. But you remember a couple of weeks ago, technically, the situation at Trader Joe's. The person that sent this, her name was Sue from St. Louis. At any rate, the situation at the Trader Joe's a few weeks ago, that spilled over into the work environment. It actually started at somebody's home. It was a domestic violence situation. Technically, when the shooting ended up taking place outside of the Trader Joe's, even though the person inside, it was a female manager, got killed with the hail of bullets from the police officers, that technically was not an active shooter event because that would have been the byproduct of another crime. So it has to just be in a public place. It has to be that the shooter was intending to shoot there. Now, let's take through what an active shooter event, because I just told you what it's not. So now let's go through what it is. If three or more people are killed, it's an active shooter event. If three or more people are wounded, it's an active shooter event. And again, this has to be in a public place. If three people were shot at, it depends upon the evidence to be able to determine whether or not it's an active shooter event. And if it in fact is guns were fired, if they only fired one shot at an unrelated person, not an active shooter event. All right. So that just gives you a rough idea. So just think about it. And, look, there's some people that only two people get killed, in my opinion. If it's in a public place, I'm going to look at that and say, okay, active shooter event. We're not going to count two and three. I'm just giving you some of the statistics that are out there on what's considered an active shooter event. Now, you asked me about some statistics for 2017. Well, let me just tell you is what I did, because I also had information from 2016 as well. And I got this through one of my websites, of course, that I have access to. But I can tell you that there's been, from Washington, some released information. And specifically, actually, the FBI released data on 50 shootings from 2016 and 2017. And these were considered active shooter events. Now, you're talking about 50 between 2016 and 2017. A total of 221 people were killed at that time, with 722 wounded. Of the 50 shooters, all were males, ranging in age from 14 to 66 years old. Now, the incidents ended as follows. 13 shooters committed suicide. 11 shooters were killed by police. 8 shooters were stopped by citizens. 18 shooters were apprehended by police. Now, some of this you're going to probably recall, but the 3 largest shootings occurred at the Root Harvest Festival in Las Vegas in 2017, the Pulse nightclub in 2016, nightclub shooting in Orlando, I'm sure you remember that, and then a third one, which I'm sure people remember because it was a church shooting, was the 2017 Sutherland Springs First Baptist Church shooting in Texas. Now, the FBI basically said, look, armed and unarmed citizens engaged in the shooter in 10 incidents. I repeat that. Armed and unarmed citizens engaged the shooter in 10 incidents. When I do my training, my active shooter training, I specifically spell out and I tell the attendees, look, you can't sit back anymore on this. If you're a person that's just going to press against the wall and now you've got an active shooter situation, if you do that, you likely could be one of the victims. I'm not telling everybody to be a hero. You have to make your determinations when you're in this particular situation as to what you should do or not do for your own safety. But as what I am saying is if they're there to shoot, do something, throw something, pick up something, whatever you have to do. The standard is that law enforcement puts out there is to run, hide, and fight. I mean, that's the standard what law enforcement puts out there and Homeland Security puts out there. But there's times when you need to step up if you think that that's going to be in the best interest of you and saving those around you. Now, I can tell you out of those 10 incidents, these citizens safely and successfully ended the shooting in eight out of the 10 of those incidents. And because these people did that, they saved other people's lives. And, you know, there's an enhanced threat with these active shooters. And the swiftness with which active shooter incidents are occurring emphasizes the importance of preparation by law enforcement and citizens alike. Remember what I told you, officers can't do it alone. They can't do it alone. They need your help with this. And whether you suspect something, see something, hear something, whatever the case may be, you've got to basically step up to the plate. It's just the times that we're living in. Again, the disclaimer, you got to do what's best for you at that time. So I'm not telling everybody out there to turn into some hero. Nobody's probably going to give you a medal. But you got to look out for your own safety and your family when you're out there. And then second to that, obviously, is watching out for your fellow man. Okay, Sue, that's it. I hope that answers your question, and I do appreciate the email. And then there's a third email that I got there's no name on it. Jim, I'm just curious, do you have any information on the ethnic background of active shooters? I thought that was a very interesting question. The person didn't put their name to it, but I have to tell you, I had kind of suspected what the answer to that might be, but I went ahead, to be fair, I went ahead and looked it up. And yeah, and I actually went back from between 1982 and June of 2018 because I wanted to make sure that I was accurate with the information. So I didn't want to just do it for a year or 2 years because, things change. So I can tell you that almost 59% of the active shooters between 1982 and June of 2018, almost 60% were Caucasian. Now, African-American or black, if you prefer, was at about 16% of the shooters. Then we had Latino. And Latino, it was about 8%, and that's tied with Asians, believe it or not. So Latino and Asians were about the same. But I'll tell you what number surprised me. Native Americans, I did not realize until actually, and you'll hear me say something about why kids kill, that one of those shooters in there was Native American, and that kind of surprised me in the research as well. But this research turned up about 3% of Native Americans as active shooters. And see, again, we don't think about those kind of things. And then we had 5% that was considered other. And then we have a 3% that's unknown. They weren't sure of the ethnic background of the individual. I mean, with a lot of interracial marriages and things of that nature, possibly people from foreign countries, I don't know, but they weren't able to determine who they were. And I will tell you something else. 71% of the shootings, the weapons that they used, were legally obtained. Did you hear what I said? Legally obtained. They were not illegal guns. And see, that always sparks a debate. Once again, how do we check on these things? 71% with the active shooter, legally obtained weapons? Illegally obtained, 15%, another 12%, it was not known. So, there is the information, Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous, and hopefully all of these statistics will go down if we review them a few years from now. We got to get this number to start heading down in the other direction. At any rate, now let's get back into why kids kill. Oh, I know you've been sitting on the edge of your seats, and here we go. Now, look, I do want to do one thing. I want to just give you that recap from last week. And also, by way of introduction, for those who maybe did not listen to the show last week, that my research on this subject matter was based upon the research by Peter Langman, who's a PhD. And he did extensive work on this. So the information that I gave out last week, as well as the information that I'm giving out this week, is the result of his research. I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not a psychiatrist. And, you know, I don't have that background. So that's why I'm making that clear in terms of where the information came from. Now, one of the questions that was posed was about this issue of bullying, because the general public thinks that some of these shooters is a result of being bullied in school. And I brought out last week that, in fact, that's not the case. Some of these kids were actually the bullies. So it's not like that. So that's a misunderstanding. And just a quick recap is that we talked about the fact that the media has a tendency to give us information as the event just happened, but that the media does not go back later on once all of the information is out there and come back and explain, oh, the person wasn't bullied, etc. But the concept of bullying is easy for people to be able to associate with, so therefore it's a result of bullying. And bullying is not a good thing. It's spilled from now from the schoolyard into the work environment, so it is a big deal. My opinion is, in the work environment, bullying is just another word for harassment. But whatever it may be, it has gotten out of control. But in the same token, I remember we had bullies in our class when I was in grammar school and then high school. I mean, that's just, there's people out there that are just plain bullies. The concept is not a new thing at all. But getting back to the school shooters, I just wanted to clarify and give a recap from last week. And I guess really the point is that there's no simple relationship between this harassment and school shootings, just to emphasize that. And what's often missing from the commentary on school shooters is an in-depth study of the perpetrators themselves in terms of what kind of people were they, what kind of problems did they have, and what goes on inside their minds. And that's kind of where we left it off last week. So I want to continue on since we didn't get a chance to technically finish part one. So here we go. At any rate, look, the point seems obvious. It needs to be said, school shooters are disturbed individuals. I guess nobody's going to argue about that. And we have to understand that these are not ordinary kids who were bullied into retaliation. These are not ordinary kids who played too many video games, despite the fact that some people think that video games and how bad they are may have led to this. That's, the research, according to Langman, doesn't support that. These are not ordinary kids who just wanted to be famous. The fact is, what has often been missed or minimized in reports on school shooters. So, we have to look at it a little deeper. These are simply not ordinary kids. Now, you say they're not ordinary? I'm telling you they're not ordinary. Not based upon the research I read. These were kids with serious psychological problems. This fact has often been missed and it's been minimized. Now, if the school shooters are a complex phenomenon, has it have been any focus on simplistic explanation like bullying? That's what it is. Everybody wants to say it's bullying because it's simple. It's easy to understand. Now, one reason, they say, is that the immediate aftermath after an attack is detailed information about the perpetrator. It's not available. They haven't done an in-depth study of this. And sometimes this takes years. Even months is the bottom line with the relevant details. It's not made to the public. And by that point, the story is no longer front page news, so the media doesn't get back in touch with us. Because why? It's gone. They moved on to other things. So they never get back and tell us what exactly happened. So the more in-depth information does not reach as large an audience as the initial reports. And once again, it's easier to just think about the fact that it was bullying or they were harassed. Now, another issue is that most people are not mental health professionals and therefore cannot be expected to understand personality disorders, depression, trauma, and psychotic disorders. And that's why Langman did his research to be able to get the information out there. Because the average person isn't like that. You could speculate. Hey, we get calls sometimes from clients that somebody seems to be a little off to them and they want to know whether or not they can send them out to be tested. And of course, we tell them, no, you cannot send them out there to be tested. So once again, people are making these different judgment calls that somebody might have an issue. You're not in that field. Stay away from it. Now, there is another reason for the triumph of the soundbite, you know, from the media. Put simply, we can all understand the concept of revenge. So sometimes what the media puts out is that, oh, they were operating in revenge for the way that they were treated, retaliation being victimized. It seems like a plausible explanation for a school shooting. I mean, when you really think about it, after all, why wouldn't someone shoot people at school if they felt that they'd been wronged? But if you think about that explanation on a superficial side, does that make sense? Of course it does. It does not tell us, though, why millions of other students who do not commit murder in response to being teased or bullied. Nevertheless, we can always look at revenge as a motive. We love that word revenge, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Look, here's the deal. There are so many other students out there, unfortunately, who have been bullied or harassed or teased. Come on, kids are who they are. Think about how many kids are out there and how many schools are out there, yet they're not all out there shooting at each other and killing each other. So when questions are asked about teasing, the answer is often, yes, he was teased. That's the easy answer. So what we do is we focus on that, because it gives meaning to an act that otherwise seems meaningless. Revenge makes sense. What about a teenage boy from a good home who idolizes Hitler and fantasizes about killing off humanity? Does that make sense? But even though revenge seems plausible, teasing does not cause murder, not by itself. There has been something wrong within the minds of the school shooters. And it has nothing to do with revenge, believe it or not. Now, I'm not going to tell you that there wasn't a situation where there was a school shooter, because some of these school shooters, as I mentioned last week, were school shooters who had possibly been rejected by one of their girlfriends and now came back and did something. I want to talk about some shooters. I'm going to talk to you about 10 shooters. I'm going to give you some brief history on 10 school shooters who went on a rampage. But then I'm going to focus on 2 to 3 specifically, because these are the ones that you're going to kind of remember. But I have to tell you, out of the 10, the youngest one, 11 years old. An 11-year-old school shooter, and you're telling me that that person killed people for revenge? The oldest one out of this group was 23, and I'm going to focus on these in a moment. Now, the reason why we have information on these 10 is because of the fact that there was enough research out there, because sometimes you can't get anything. But on these individuals, they were able to do an in-depth So here's my disclaimer again. That's not to say that every school shooter is going to fit within one of these guidelines. All right? So let me make that clear. But some of these you're going to remember, and the Columbine shooter is definitely going to be one of them because that's the school where everybody remembers Columbine. If I could ask you about a school shooting that took place in, you know, New Mexico not too long ago, in Texas not too long ago, Utah, I bet you can't even tell me. But Columbine, everybody remembers Columbine. So I'm going to give you a recap on what they consider the top 10 shooters who an in-depth study was done on. The first one was Evan Ramsey, age 16. And believe it or not, the shooting took place in Bethel, Alaska. How many of you remember a school shooting out of Alaska? This particular individual was suicidal. And when he told his friends that he wanted to kill himself, they encouraged him to kill other people at school. Friends, I've talked about this before, about how some of these shooters actually tell people what they're going to do, and some don't say anything. Teachers, parents, classmates, friends in the neighborhood. And with their encouragement, he developed a hit list. This kid actually developed a hit list because of the fact that his friends encouraged him. So he developed this hit list. And on February 19, 1997, he went to school and shot a student and he shot the principal. Both died. He also wounded two other students. Evan put a gun under his chin to kill himself, but guess what? He could not bring himself to pull the trigger. To this day, he remains in prison. And this was in Alaska. How many of you remember a school shooting in Alaska? Columbine was 1999. This was just 2 years before. And by the way, some of these school shooters, they get their information, as I've learned in this research, through what they've seen and heard on the news and on the internet. Second one, Michael Corniel, 14 years old, West Paducah, Kentucky. Who remembers Kentucky shooting? Michael talked about something big that was going to happen on the Monday after Thanksgiving. And on December 1st, 1997, here we go. Just a number of months after this other one I just told you about, he went to school with five firearms. Five. He's 14. He went to school with five firearms, a pistol, two rifles, and two shotguns. Now, just keep in mind, shotguns, they can get those. He's a 14-year-old, probably got them from his parents, but let's keep going through it. He killed three girls and wounded five other students. Michael yelled for someone to kill him. This kid wanted somebody to kill him, but made no attempt to kill himself. He's still in prison, where he has attempted suicide at least twice. He wanted to die, but he wanted somebody to kill him. Now, you heard of this thing about suicide by cop. But hey, he's 14 years old. Police officers are not quick to want to shoot a 14-year-old. And I know some of you are going to say, oh, they've done that to black kids. They've done that to this. They've done that. Look, I'm just telling you, generally speaking, there's a lot for a police officer, whether you believe it or not, you know, to shoot a 14-year-old. And I know it happens sometimes. It's unfortunate. And it even happens by accident, you know. But you'd have to be out there to see some of these circumstances sometimes to believe it. The next one. This, to me, is a sad story. His name was Andrew Golden. His nickname was Drew. He's one of the ones I'm going to actually talk to you about. But how old was this kid? 11 years old. So Andrew Golden, and Mitchell Johnson. Mitchell was 13, and this was in Jonesboro, Arkansas, on March 24th, 1998. Now, remember what I told you. Some of this they see and hear on the internet. The Michael Corniel shooting in Kentucky was in December 1997. This is 3 months later in 1998, March of 1998. And it's what these two boys did. They carried out a sniper attack from outside the school as students and teachers exited the building after Andrew pulled a fire alarm. Now, see, remember what happened down in Parkland, Florida? What did the student do? He pulled a fire alarm. I keep telling you, this stuff is not new. And yet they made it sound like when this last kid did this Parkland shooting and pulled a fire alarm, as if that was something new and creative. It was not. These two boys, 11 and 13, killed four girls and a teacher. They wounded nine other students and one other teacher. Now listen to this. Andrew and Mitchell were too young to be tried as adults in Arkansas. They were too young. So they were convicted as juveniles. They served their time until they were both 21. And believe it or not, both have been released and are now free men. I kid you not. 11 years old and 13, they killed these people because they were juveniles. They were convicted as juveniles. And when they turned 21, they were released back into society. Now, I've done some work on kids that kill as well. And I can tell you there are kids on death row or with prison sentences. I don't want to get into all of that research at the moment, that are actually in prison, did killings at very young ages. And the United States Supreme Court at some point came out and said you cannot execute juveniles. They were doing it at one time in this country, if you're ready for that. Virginia was one of the worst states. But then the United States Supreme Court came out and said it's a violation of the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual punishment, that you cannot execute juveniles. And see, this was in 1998. So at that time, hey, they were tried as juveniles. And remember the other ones I told you, they're all doing life sentences. So these two guys got off easy, so to speak. Anyway, moving on. Andrew Wurst. Another age 14 kid, Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, keep track of the time frames. The last one was March of 1998. This one, April 98. April 24th. What was the other one I just told you? March 24th. 4 weeks later, Andrew went to a school dinner dance. Before leaving home, he left a suicide note at home. And picked up a pistol. How does he just pick up a pistol at 14? You know it was in the household. At the dance, he shot and killed a teacher and wounded another teacher and two students. To this day, this was in 1998, he's in prison. Pennsylvania doesn't play either. You know about the Cosby conviction. That's Pennsylvania. No statute of limitations on what he did. He went to jail. Next one. Kip Kinkle, 15, Springfield, Oregon. Look at where these places are. Arkansas, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Alaska. And look at the date on this one. May 20th, 1998. Once again, 1 month apart. This kid was suspended from school for having a gun at school. He actually brought a gun to school and was suspended. Later that day, what does he do? He kills his parents. Kills his parents. You heard me right. The next day, now, when we talk about harassment or bullying, he killed his parents. That's not related to school bullying. The next day, he goes to school and killed two students and wounded 25 students. He had planned to kill himself, but was tackled by students before he had the chance to do that. Once again, he yelled for somebody to kill him. He's being kept in prison for the rest of his life. 15. Now, remember, you heard me in one respect say that they were too young because to be convicted as juveniles. They were convicted as juveniles, and they were released. That's Arkansas. Some of this is on a state level. Those are state crimes. So each state may have their own system. So keep that in mind. These are not federal crimes. These are state crimes. So each state. So here, in this particular case, these kids, as I just told you, the Pennsylvania kid, and now also in Oregon, they're remaining in prison for the rest of their lives. But in Arkansas, these two only did it. They were tried as juveniles, and they were out when they were 21. The next one, you're going to know who these guys are. Well, maybe you'll know, but you'll know the name of the school, because it's the second one that I'm going to focus on today and go into details, as I am going to do with Andrew Golden. Eric Harris, 18 years old, and Dylan Kleibel, 17. Where were they? Jefferson County, Colorado. Look at all of the different states. This was in April of 1999, and Eric and Dylan carried out a complex attack involving a sequence of bombs and shootings that they had planned for over a year. Because most of the bombs did not detonate, Eric and Dylan were forced to improvise. They began shooting outside the school, then entered the building and continued shooting. They killed 12 students and one teacher and wounded 23 students. Eric and Dylan committed suicide. What was the name of the high school? Columbine. Columbine. The next one, Jeffrey Weiss, age 16, Red Lake, Minnesota. Look at the different states once again. March 2005. Jeffrey killed his grandfather, who was a police officer. What did that have to do with bullying at the school? He also killed his grandfather's girlfriend. What did that have to do with bullying at the school? Jeffrey then drove his grandfather's police cruiser to school, where he killed the security guard, a teacher, and five students. And not only that, he wounded seven other students, and then what did he do? He committed suicide right there at the school. Some of these motives are still unknown. But once again, we have in-depth information on these people that I've been ringing off to you here. But we're not going to go into detail on this one, because I have the other ones that I want to do, and those are going to be kind of time-consuming. The last one that I want to tell you about is Sing-Yoon Hugh Choi, age 43. Now, this one you're going to remember. Virginia Polytech Institute and State University in Blackbird, Virginia. You guys remember that one? The Virginia shooting, and it was early on the morning of April 16th of 2007. Choi killed two students in a dormitory. He then mailed a package containing a multimedia manifesto to NBC News. Following this, he went into a classroom where he killed 30 people, including students and professors, and wounded 17 others. Then he committed suicide. 30 students and people killed, another 17 wounded. These were the most horrific. And again, I'm not taking anything out of the Parkland shooting, but it hasn't been enough time to do the in-depth study on that yet. But these are the top 10. And I'm going to tell you, just think about it. This is remarkably a very diverse group. Look at where they were from, all different parts of the country. How did they hear about the other shootings? The media, the internet. We are truly living in different times. Now, their ranges, like I told you, range from 11 to 23. And most of these, I'll tell you this, consistent with the other statistics I gave you, were Caucasian. But one of them, Jeffrey Weiss, who I told you about, Native American. Evan Ramsey was half Native American, and Cho was Korean. And guess what? Most came from solid, intact, middle-class families. Only three didn't. Most killed exclusively at school, but as I told you, Kip Kinkle and Jeffrey Wise also killed family members. Family members. How do you do that? Most of them were suicidal, even if they surrendered or were stopped before they could kill themselves. But in contrast, Andrew Golden and Mitchell Johnson had planned to escape in a van that they had stocked with food and clothes. And remember, I'm going to go a little bit more detail into those guys. Well, at least Andrew, mostly. And some that we're going to discuss had schizophrenia. Others were just completely sane. There was nothing wrong with them mentally. Now, as the study showed, certain shooters share characteristics with others. That's going to make sense. And there's a number of parallels about their family, histories, personalities, and psychological problems that they had. So what Langman did, just to let you know, is that he started grouping these people together to find out what these shooters had in common. And then based on his research, he figured out that there was only three different type of school shooters. the psychopathic, the psychotic, and the traumatized. And basically, he goes into detail in his research with all of them. All right? Okay. So how are we going to start out? By the way, before I forget, if you need to call, have any comments or questions, please call 818-602-4929. Or you can send me an email, listen up with Jim Potts, or listen up with JP at pottsandassociates.com. I'm Jim Potts. You know that already anyway. So now, psychopath. Look, I'm sure most of my listeners are not going to know what the definitions of some of these terminologies that layman rings off so easily. But yeah, let me just tell you what a psychopath is. They're defined by a cluster of personality traits. First, they are extremely narcissistic. Narcissism involves two related concepts, egotism and egocentrism. Now, people who are egotistical think they are superior to other people. People who are egocentric meet their own needs with little or no concern for the needs of those around them. And they're self-centered. And they're so self-centered that they have no empathy for other people. Second, psychopaths have no use for morality, no concern for traditional ideas of right and wrong. And in addition to that, they do not experience guilt or remorse. These are psychopaths I'm talking about. And they also have problems with anger management. And I'm sure that's a terminology that many of us know about. Because psychopaths are so preoccupied with meeting their own needs, they have extremely angry responses when their desires are thwarted. All right? And they do it based upon everyday frustrations that we all have, but those everyday frustrations can generate rage out of these people. And because they lack empathy and morality, their anger can be dangerous. That's what we have to think about. So, I want to go back to Andrew Gordon, 11 years old. He was known as Drew, and he grew up in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And his father was from there. And both parents, by the way, his parents were local postmasters. His mother, Pat Golden, after having two kids from a previous marriage, had a tuple litigation where when she married Drew's father, they wanted to have a child, and they turned around and reversed that process so that they could have another child, and Drew was that child. So that was the only child that this couple had, and he was, of course, he was kind of like the apple of their eye, so to speak, and the family said he was the center of their world. So that gives you an idea already that this kid was probably spoiled. Now, I will tell you something else about this guy, Drew. I should say kid. Firearms were a significant part of his family and childhood. His grandfather worked for the State Fish and Game Commission and hunted frequently. Drew's parents were leaders of the Jonesboro Practical Pistol Shooters Association. And as a result of his family's affinity for firearms, Drew handled guns from a young age. And he was given a rifle for his sixth birthday, and had other weapons of his own as well. He was fascinated with guns. They say possibly obsessed with guns. And some teachers even said it was the toy of choice for him when he was in preschool, and into the grade school. Now, I will tell you something. The research showed that when he was away from his parents and teachers, he showed a different side of himself. The neighbors described him as a little demon, mean-spirited, and evil acting. He was hostile, aggressive, and threatening toward other children. What did that have to do with him being bullied at Columbine, or at his school, rather, excuse me? Nothing. He even hit girls, cursed and yelled at his peers, and threatened to shoot them with his BB gun. He rode his bicycle with a knife strapped to his leg, intimidating other children. And then there was his behavior with cats. Okay, for you cat lovers out there, let me just tell you, when Drew was around, cats had a tendency to disappear. All right? Now, don't send me hate mail saying, why am I chuckling about that? But he killed a cat one time by starving a cat in a barrel. He pushed the heads of kittens through chain-link fences. He shot bottle rockets and BBs at cats. Tied one to a clothesline, shot BBs at it, and slit the throats of others. This kid was 11 years old, folks, as a reminder. He was the one that went to jail until he was 21, to a juvenile detention center. And guess what? He's out there somewhere. Hide your cats. It was no wonder that parents told kids not to play with him. His own family, however, did not acknowledge this side of him. He was overindulged and not disciplined. And when he acted up in school and was paddled by his grandfather yelled, not at the boy, but at the teacher. The teacher caught it from the grandfather. Let me ask you this. Where does an 11-year-old boy get the idea to commit mass murder? Think about that. He was beloved and pampered by his family. The primary motivation Drew had for the attack was his anger at teachers. He had said to the other shooter that he was tired of their crap, quote unquote. But you have to wonder, if he was angry at teachers, why did he shoot students also? Was he the victim of bullying? The answer is no. He was the one who threatened and intimidated other kids. He was not a victim. Maybe he was ostracized or socially isolated. No, not that either. He had friends. He had even begun to date. He didn't target any of the girls who had rejected him. One of the wounded victims, as it turned out, was a girl that had broken up with him. But again, he was just shooting at that point. The fact that, listen to this, the fact that 14 out of the 15 victims were females, 12 students, 2 teachers. It does make one wonder if Drew and his co-partner, Mitchell, were targeting girls and women. Now, Langman is quick to point out that the gender of the victims was simply a result of their line of fire. Okay. But I'll tell you what else. Psychopaths also have significant difficulty managing their anger. I mentioned that to you earlier. This was evident in Drew's behavior with his peers in the neighborhood. As I told you, he would curse at them, yell at them, and even threaten to shoot them. He seemed to think that the school rules didn't apply to him and that he was above the ordinary guidelines of society. What did I tell you earlier? He's a psychopath. His most disturbing trait, though, he was a sadist. A sadist enjoyed inflicting pain and watching other people or animals suffer. And prior to the shooting, his worst behavior involved his torturing and killing of cats, as I kind of already mentioned to you. This kid at 11 years old, folks, it had nothing to do with his being bullied. He had issues. Maybe because his parents overindulged him. He was a psychopath. And apart from his sadism, let me just tell you, his behavior, from everything I've been reading, even during his trial, raised questions about his ability to feel guilt for his actions or even empathy for his victims. His co-shooter, Mitchell Johnson, he pleaded guilty to the murder charges. He even apologized. Drew, he pleaded not guilty. Can you imagine the gall? He pleaded not guilty and offered no apology. What does that tell you? He wasn't upset for being bullied. And even some of the journalists at the trial looked at this kid and said that it was disturbing to them that he had a lack of emotion, even in court. They even said that he seemed almost, unaware that he was even in court. Said he wasn't even, he didn't even appear to be interested in the proceedings. That's the difference between these two. His courtroom behavior suggested that he lacked a conscience and any kind of empathy at all. And if you think about the attack, in the absence of any other forces, it just always seems to be was psychopathic. It was premeditated murder by a person full of possession of his own mental faculties. This kid was no dummy, all right? He didn't hear voices telling him to shoot people. He was not paranoid or confused about reality. And technically, they say he wasn't even full of rage because of abuse at home or by bullying by his peers. And by the way, keep in mind, he was not suicidal and had no intentions of dying in the attack. Think about it. He didn't die. He didn't kill himself. He was arrested, went to jail. Now, if you think about it, what traits of a psychopathic shooter did he exhibit? Narcissism, a lack of morality, anger problems, impression management, sadism, and a lack of remorse. That is the big deal. That's who that 11-year-old was, folks. He was a psychopath. Why do kids kill? I'm giving you one of the reasons. And it's not because of bullying. We're out of time. But I'm having a good time with this, and I'm going to share. Next week, we're going to talk about the Columbine shooters. So it looks like Why Kids Kill went from part one to part two, and now we will be in the part three. But we will finish it up next week because I've got to tell you about these Columbine shooters and who they were. All right? Again, emphasizing the fact that this is important information. For you parents out there overindulging the kids, making sure that these kids are staying on the straight and narrow, giving them access to weapons, we've got to be locking these weapons up. For some of you that live in these rural areas, I get it. They're out there hunting. Dad is out there hunting. The older brother's out there hunting. You know, Uncle John is out there hunting. I get all of that. But you can't take this for granted anymore. Remember something. The shootings, the school shootings, not in urban schools. They're in suburban and rural schools. These kids have free access to weapons. They're not going through criminal background checks. Their parents are getting the guns. Lock the guns up. Don't make an assumption that my little Johnny, okay, would never do anything like this. This kid, like I told you, was overindulged, and you see what happens. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Hey, let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Now look, do me a favor. If you like what you heard today, spread the word. We're getting more and more listens out there because these are sensitive areas that I'm talking about. I'm trying to give you information out there to be safe. So get everybody tuned in. Let's start working together to have a more safe country for ourselves. Let's start with the lower level and work our way up. But until then, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. Take care. I'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.